T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable.
Friday!
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust. Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
It's Christmas. Baby, please come home.
I thought it was Cam Wex going all Christmas music, so I might have been mistaken, but KZK did flip the switch a little later than most years, I must say. And this is always, something to attract many listeners, and other radio stations do it too. So I've always asked my boss, Steve Moore, Jane, why don't we just do it? Don't you think we just play Christmas music nonstop? We might as well.
I really could.
Yeah, put us in the holiday mood, but instead, we're going to talk about impeachment this afternoon. All right. So I can't wait to do that. The panel is assembled. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is a beautiful, beautiful Friday afternoon, and I am getting ready to do this right now. Jane always liked that when I bring that. That's my grunt call. Heading out to the woods of Howard County to slay some deer. You've had an open invitation for years from my buddies in Columbia.
I have, but I could just hunt them in my yard.
Well, that's actually a good point,
right? So, I mean, if we don't do something, they won't do anything about the deer population. So it's really bad this fall.
Well, let's get to other issues here. John Lamping, former state senator, is with us this afternoon as well. Is the 56-degree sandwich you brought mine from when we played at Boone Valley or something to hold back Jane this afternoon?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm using it. It's closer to me.
How are you, John?
I don't know what wedge to handle Jane, though. I need a driver.
I was glad that I got that back, so thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
How did you lose it? I mean, I'm curious.
Just left on the green.
It happens. Probably after a really good shot, though.
That's right.
Beautiful golf course. I had John was nice enough to have me out to Boone Valley. I'd never played there before, and it has been one of my favorites I've ever played, either here, Wisconsin, or anywhere else. So I really thought it was a beautiful course. Jack Cardetti is here with us. We've been trying to book this guy for at least 3 or 4 days, and actually, he's been on the list for a while, but man, you're busy dude, aren't you?
Busy, but I'm back today, and I've heard you talk about deer hunting a ton. We've never actually had jerky or anything in here, so I'm questioning your skill here, Mark.
I'll get you covered. We have Fritz's Frozen Custard today, but they're closing down for the season next Sunday, so we'll make sure that we get you some deer sausage for sure. Let me just start off with the news about the Cardinals on KMOX. Carol had that in the news.
Oh, it's so good.
5-year extension, so that's great news because we were glad to have them on their proper home. And I also want to just make mention of this, that they are increasing the number of early starts next year, the 6:45 starts. And I kind of like that. They've extended them through mainly the school months because that way, it just,
families,
for these games that go really long, I think it makes a big difference to get there a little bit earlier. I guess the downside would be the stadium doesn't really fill up until maybe closer to 7:15, but that's fine with me.
No, it's great. I mean, it's an issue that baseball has been trying to deal with a long time. The length of the games, the average length is about 3 hours and 25 minutes. And, 7:10 plus 3 and 25 means the place is either going to, it's empty in the seventh inning. So I just as soon have it be a little empty at the 6:45 start.
Good week for the Cardinals with Jack Flaherty finishing fourth in the Cy Young Award votes and Mike Schilt, NL Manager of the Year. Yep. So we're, and one of the great things that we love about October baseball is that the spring will be here much quicker. So we'll have a lot to look forward to.
And by then the Blues will be doing, even greater.
And Wainwright back for one last year.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Love it. I can't get enough Wainwright and Molina. So one more year, it's the proper send off. And we need pitching. And what he did last year, I think he's going to help.
Well, he earned it. There's no doubt he
earned
it.
Spot,
but his role may be yet to be determined, too. I mean, will he start? Maybe he will be a starter. Maybe contributions elsewhere. All right. So let me just warn the panel here as we get started. This is kind of like Shifty Shift swearing people in. So I want you to raise your hand. It doesn't have to be your right or left hand. I promise not to talk over Jane Duker, John Lamping, or Jack Cardetti. Now, when I say I can do whatever I want. I'm the host. I'm saying you guys. So you have to be, we're going to treat this because there's a lot of passion. Usually, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I give this speech before the roundtable, but we were kind of getting in here all at the last minute because I was doing some stuff and I didn't get a chance to give my speech. So basically, Jane, I'm addressing you. Make sure that we take turns. John, I'm going to start with you. This whole thing, and I've said it before, I do think it's possible, maybe I'm the only one, to feel like some of this stuff should not have happened the way that it happened with the call. I'm not comfortable with all of it. But I, even after hearing three witnesses now who were not part of that phone call on July 25th, who have no evidence of it, and I know the transcript is the transcript. We're learning a lot about foreign policy. There is not an impeachable offense. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, so far, nothing has happened that would suggest to kind of the casual voter that this is anything other than a partisan happening. All of us are political insiders. We all pay attention. We look at individual testimony. But, you know, you had a vote to convene this process. It was actually bipartisan in the know. It was all Democrats had voted for it. And so far, this is clearly not all they have. This is the beginning of, I guess, if it goes all the way through, it could go months and months and months. If it continues like this, it'll be viewed as a partisan ongoing. This whole thing broke last time I was on the air, and at that time I said, you know, I think the person who's going to lose the most in this is Joe Biden, the candidate, and I think that's played itself out in the polls. But I also think all the other candidates, if this goes on for weeks and weeks and months, and you're a Democratic candidate trying to make your case, and you have to break through this noise, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to do that.
Yeah, we'll get into some of the politics relating to that as we go on this hour, because there are new polls, and you see Mayor Pete sort of popping through in Iowa. Obviously, my friends Jack and Jane are going to have a different perspective on impeachment.
Yes.
Yeah, you've seen evidence that this is going to result in articles of impeachment from the House. It will. I know that.
Well,
and sent to the Senate,
I think
guy's going to be removed from office. To what ends? Then Mike Pence will be our president in a year? You're okay with that, right?
No, of course not. But no, I think that I think they're making the case. I think it's too early to tell whether they've convinced. Because look, let's face it. There's a certain group of people that are, you know, solid Trump no matter what. There's a certain people who are going to be anti-Trumpers. We're talking about the middle slice. And it's a very small slice.
I think that slice is tuned out.
I do too. But I think, you know, but you never know what evidence comes in that could change things. And I don't see any downside to the Democratic candidates at all that this is going on. Just watching the Trumpster decompose on Twitter and watching just, you know, because the Republicans are completely distracted with this. And so I don't see it hurting the Democratic candidates at all.
But you understand John's point, because if this is going to be something, look, Senator Blunt was quoted, if this is going to go on, we have a Senate trial for 6 weeks, how in the world are the Democrats who are hoping for coverage and to increase their visibility and to get their agenda before the voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, wherever, how will they hear that message outside of the door-to-door campaigning, which, of course, there is a lot of boots on the ground in those states. But you don't think that's a distraction?
If this is still going on for months, it's because they've got a lot of good evidence. And so, you know, it's hard to tell at this point.
Well, we haven't had any evidence yet this week, so I hope that's still coming. We've learned a lot about foreign policy, big snoozer, but we have no evidence that it's an impeachable offense.
The people on that phone call won't go to Congress. They won't tell their story.
Exactly.
That's part of what that is. But I think the telling part here, and I've watched it on the committee, and I've watched it with you two, is that neither of you are sticking up for what Trump did. Right. What he did on that phone call, what he did with that foreign country, it's extortion. It's bribery.
No, it is not bribery. That's the biggest nonsense. I'm going to let Jack finish, but
you're
going to
talk about process, and you're going to come on, you're going to say, we got to hear from the whistleblower and all of this. But none of you guys are defending what Trump actually did here.
Here's what I'd say to that. I do not think, personal opinion, it was a perfect call. I think the optics are bad. I think he shouldn't have done it the way that he did it. Having said that, you guys, this is where you lost the fight. I'll be honest with you. You lost it with the bribery thing, because the American people, you don't think they are, but they're smart enough to understand that the narrative keeps changing. Bribery is a joke. And by the way, this witness, and I think Ambassador Kenton Taylor, and I don't like the way that some conservatives are impeaching these diplomats and the bureaucrats, because their service to this country is indisputable. On the other hand, when they're asked point blank, is there anything that is impeachable or illegal or a crime, she answered that question. Ambassador Vojinovich this morning, absolutely in the negative. So how do you see bribery? Where do you even get that from?
Yeah, this is, it was very crystal clear.
You don't get a meeting and you don't get aid unless you do investigations. I mean,
yeah, it's, if you it's do their, my political work.
Right. I mean, Mulvaney, you know, whatever his name, and the chief said, of staff guy admitted it.
Mark, I actually have the different view on Biden, which is a lot of us thought Joe Biden probably not ideally suited to win this Democratic primary for a number of different reasons. I actually think Trump's attacks on Biden have helped him in the primary up to this point. If you look at his national polling numbers and everything, I think the fact that Trump went after Biden here has actually helped him.
Helped him so much that Deval Patrick's in the race now, Bloomberg's in the race, Hillary's in the race. Look, here's bribery. Bribery is a government official explaining to a president of a country that if you don't fire the prosecutor that's investigating that gas company, I'm going to take my $1 billion in aid and leave. Now, the fact of the matter that Joe Biden said that on tape, that's bribery. Now, your bribery is take a piece from here and a piece from there and this over there, and somebody said this, and somebody said this to this person. That's your case. Joe Biden said, I told the president of Ukraine, you fire the prosecutor, I'm taking my $1 billion home.
This is the point you don't get, though. He wasn't doing that for his own personal benefit. The problem here is the president is conditioning official acts and official money and our national security policy to secure a personal benefit against to go after his political rival, who he obviously is the most afraid of because this is what he's obsessed with.
I don't think he's so most afraid of Sleepy Joe.
Benefit.
I really don't.
It's a personal benefit that he is seeking. Joe Biden was trying to get rid of a corrupt prosecutor. That wasn't for his personal benefit.
It was for his son's personal benefit.
Foreign
countries now know that when they're dealing with President Trump, he's not always looking out for the country's best interest. He's looking out for his own best interest, right? Why do we think that's a bunch of nonsense? Mark, why did he get rolled by Turkey? How did he get rolled by North Korea?
Right. He did.
Turkey hasn't been a world power since World War One, and yet they have dislodged us from the Middle East and allowed Russia to walk
around. And Republicans have acknowledged that. He's been rolled by Putin. He's been rolled by Erdogan. That's embarrassing. And it all, they don't flatter him.
He's looking out for himself here, and they know that.
What's going on in these hearings is completely partisan, and the average person understands it. It's just that, and it's not going to sway anyone's mind.
Since President Trump took office, Democrats have taken back 9 governorships, more than 300 state legislative races. They flipped 10 chambers. So if this is what Trump is doing politically to help himself, I'm not sure it's
okay. But
working.
Jack, you know, look, you guys are political strategists. Do you really think this is going to change a bunch of minds in Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Michigan?
I do think there's middle of the road people that this.
I think this really shows voters that President Trump, what he does every single day, isn't out working for them. He's not out there trying to protect
their
jobs.
This is more evidence of a narrative.
Then they start thinking about a tax cut and having to pay more taxes when a Democrat takes over that claims that the climate is going to, you know, ruin the planet within 11 years. So I'm thinking, man, my electric bill is going to pretty much go up 10 times.
I have a great economy.
I have a job right now, and my 401k is rocking. So let me think about this. Trump made a phone call. Maybe he shouldn't have said what he said. You know, it's kind of stupid that the Democrats thought it was an impeachable thing. They wasted the country's time with it. So Elizabeth Warren, Donald Trump, I think I'm going with Trump again because you guys put up such a bad candidate. There's one narrative that's probably pretty accurate for you next year.
I mean, I agree. If we put up a lunatic, that's giving away a free lunch. But that doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, this is the right thing to do. Yes, I do think there are candidates we could put up that would ensure our loss. Absolutely.
All right, hang on. We're coming back with more. It's the Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau for a Friday afternoon. Jay Duker is here, former State Senator John Lamping, and Democrat strategist Jack Cardetti. John, should the whistleblower testify in all of this?
I'm okay if they don't. The rules about whistleblowers, and you could, like, the fact that a whistleblower can be a secondhand news whistleblower and not be direct news, that was changed right before this whistleblower came forward, which is kind of nice and tricky. But I do think that whistleblowers should that it's important that they have their anonymity.
Do you agree? One thing this is frightening when I have to do this, but I'll have to admit it publicly that I agree with Jane on something. There's been a lot made on the Republican side about how this is not due process and the Republicans are being shut down. I know that you offered some analogies in your Twitter rants this week. Again, reluctantly, I have to agree with you, but this is not unlike perhaps a grand jury situation, and he will have an opportunity if it goes to a trial
get
in
a
the
full
Senate.
Trial with all the
now that's not. I'm not defending Schiff in the way that this is all going down, but this is what political parties
do. They complained that it was in secret, so then it becomes public. They complain about that. I mean, so. Look, this is all basically coming up with an indictment. That's all this is.
The trial is in the Senate.
Yeah, the trial's in the Senate, and this is just a public grand jury. That's all this is. But they're getting more than they probably should. But
the important
that's
thing on the whistleblower, though, is that
I agree on the whistleblower.
Whistleblower's account has held up. If you look at the transcript of the call, if you look at all of the witnesses so far,
everything
there's nothing
said
in the whistleblower's account to this point that is wrong.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, so, I think you're right about
and
that.
And I think, too, so again,
that's
so
why I think some
so
of the complaints.
Republicans that say we got to have the whistleblower, whatever, again, that's a distraction because they're unwilling to actually defend what Trump did.
I think in a trial, though, hearsay evidence is hearsay evidence and won't stand won't stand up in a trial. And
because they have all the people that can testify to what the whistleblower said. So, one person was in a room, in a restaurant, and he heard Donald Trump on the telephone. That is firsthand knowledge. Him talking about the investigations on the telephone and Sondland coming out of that conversation.
Sondland's testimony is going to be key next week.
They've made it key, but if it ends up being the Mueller report, or who was this first guy that came out of it? He went to the Mueller School of Testimony. I mean, so we'll see. It's going to be the same what it is now. It's going to be a partisan thing, and Jane's going to be excited about it. And let's be honest, this is part of the 2020 political campaign strategy, the Democratic Party. That's what they decided to do. He's never going to be impeached. We'll see.
Do you not see it as a problem?
Like there's never been a Benghazi or an email. I mean, Republicans didn't do the same thing.
Do you not see it as a problem, though, that when you explain to the American people, and look, the Republicans are going to do a good job of repeating this, and the president is too, when you have headlines, when you have Wolf Blitzer and others asking questions about impeachment as far back as before the president took office, you don't think that's a bit problematic when it comes to the marketing of this and how you guys are selling it? If you've been talking, a lot of people are going to sit back and say, people are going to say, look at what you did. There's a headline. You've been talking about this. Now you finally have this. This is not that big of a bombshell. We're bored by it. All these people up there, they've done great work for the country, but they even admit that there's no crime. So it's a hard sell.
If we oversell it, then, then we'll pay for it. But I guess we'll find out because I don't think the polling is showing that we're paying a negative consequence for it.
All right. Speaking of the polling, Jack Cardetti, we were talking a little bit about the politics of this. The average in Iowa right now has Elizabeth Warren up slightly, but there was a new poll, of course, that came out this week that saw that Mayor Pete was surging. Mayor Pete probably would have some issues with African Americans. I think he's a pretty solid young candidate, and he's obviously appealing and I think energetic, and people are attracted to him for a variety of reasons. But can he not only win Iowa, but can he become a feasible and a viable national candidate?
Yeah, well, I think South Carolina and Nevada will tell us that.
Right.
I mean, those are the states, the early states.
I agree.
That, he's in a lot of ways tailor-made for New Hampshire and Iowa. And his campaign has been really well done so far. And he, unlike others, hasn't avoided the press. He's kind of a John McCain in some old ways, the straight-talking express. So he's done a nice job. The question for him is, can he win states like South Carolina and Nevada that have much more diverse electorates?
Yep. And I do think that's a test, but I think he's definitely in the hunt. And I wouldn't have said that a time ago, but, it's not that he hasn't had challenges.
But we should at least explain to people why this is an issue with diverse crowds, because a large swath of the African-American population is not crazy about
Jim Clyburn went on national television and he admitted it.
Yes.
That there are old school African Americans that are not comfortable with his sexuality. Clyburn was straight up with it, which I think is good because it needs to be out there that is the issue. And so, every sector has their issues with discrimination. And I think that it's very healthy that we are talking about all of it. And underground, it would have been a problem. I think it was very smart of Clyburn to get up and say, look, we have a challenge here. We need to deal with that. I think bringing it out in the open is probably the best thing for him and for the party.
But the mayor's only surged because he's trying to fill the moderate lane.
Yes.
And it's because Biden's in the moderate lane. He's horrible. That's why he surged.
I don't know about that. I mean, we have Elizabeth Warren and Bernie. They're the same. You have, you know, Klobuchar, Biden, and Buttigieg all fighting for the middle.
Well,
I mean, I think
Biden
reflects...
was at 35 and Buttigieg was at 0. Now Biden's at 20 and Buttigieg is at 14. So he's he's taken his vote away from Biden.
For now. But I do think the ground hasn't stopped moving. And I also think that this issue between the radical left wing and the more moderate arms of the Democrat, that represents what's going on within the Democratic Party right now.
You can tell Mayor Pete is catching on because for the first time, he's really starting to take attacks from Republicans.
Yes, he is.
They clearly see him as a candidate, one of the candidates they don't want to see in this general election.
Well, they don't want to see a moderate because that middle slice.
But he's for all the same policies. He's just playing in the moderate lane.
Actually, he's not. On health care, he is starkly opposed to what Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are proposing. So, I mean, he is against Medicare for all. So, I mean, I know everybody wants
that's
to paint everybody. But there is differences among the Democrats on that issue.
Is he in the group that thinks the climate's going to, you know, destroy the planet in 11 years? Or is that the rest of the field? Is he the only one who doesn't believe that nonsense?
Yeah, he's in the group, too, that thinks that. Let me get this right here. So if a lesbian woman won't sleep with a transgendered guy, then she's transphobic. I mean, Pete's in that lane, too.
I don't know about that. I don't think he's been wearing his...
I think Pete is in the lane that believes climate change is real and that it's man-made.
That was not
so,
my question.
I'm not sure if that's what you're talking about here, Mark.
No, I'm talking about the nonsense. Look, you guys, this is another thing where you over...
It's underwater at the moment.
Look, because
Missouri rivers are flooding.
That has nothing to do with climate change, though. Unfortunately, that's really not anything that's related to the way the climate is changing, and the climate is changing. But you guys, this is where you overplay your hand, because most people know that every decade there's been these dire warnings and nothing has happened. So yeah, we have challenges. We do have challenges, but all these things that happen, like wildfires, tornadoes, remember all the hurricanes and the intensity of the hurricanes that never happened for the last 10 years? You got to be careful about the predictions, because when they don't come true, people realize that it's a farce. That's the problem.
It's a little ironic that you're talking about hyperbole when your president is a liar.
I take no responsibility for that. I'll tell you that right now. We got to take a break. It's the Reardon Roundtable for a Friday afternoon, sponsored by the BBB. We're back in a moment.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
All right, we're back. Friday afternoon, Reardon Roundtable. We have delicious desserts from Fritz's Frozen Custard on the way. They close for the season, unfortunately, next Sunday, but you still have time, and we'll make sure we get the flavors out to you here in just a couple of minutes. Jane Duker, I'll start with you here on this panel, or on this topic. They're trying to put this freeholder board together for the city-county merger, whatever we're going to do with that in the future. And that even that process right now is a bit of a mess, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any hope that that's going to result in anything. So, I mean, the freeholders was set up in order to defeat Better Together. It wasn't really a system or a process that was set up to do something. It was set up as a process to oppose something that no longer exists. So, I mean, that's the kind of policy that never really gets through. So I think this is just more railing and nonsense. I don't expect them to have anything, do anything.
If you hear the folks behind this, they actually think this might result in something eventually. Yeah. John, I'm very skeptical myself.
Well, the freeholders is actually the constitutional remedy for what Better Together proposed. So if the opposition to Better Together, myself included, we actually went to Missouri Constitution and we put forward that proposition.
But if people thought it was going to work, Better Together would have utilized the process. It's a stupid process.
Now let's just think, though, politically, why is this group going to do absolutely nothing? Well, first and foremost, Lida was for the Better Together proposal, so she wants nothing to do with a different proposal. Sam is in a primary, which I guess, when's the primary then? Is it next August as well? Okay,
yeah.
So Sam's in a primary, and then Lida runs for re-election the following April, right?
And then Paige runs again because he only gets to run for the remainder of the term.
So neither Lida doesn't want to run with something on the ballot, and neither does Sam want to run. Actually, I think none of the Democratic candidates, they want to run with something on the ballot where one could be for it and one could be against it. So,
They're already fighting. I don't think
that
matters.
So there's nothing is going to come out of the Freeholders.
I think the question is, what is the end goal? I think if it's a big, big reform, like we talked about with Better Together, I don't think that is possible, right? I don't see the city re-entering the county through a Freeholder process. Now, if we're talking about some incremental change, right, sharing health departments and doing some consolidation that way, maybe that's the way the Freeholder
the way this issue should have been approached from day one. I mean, look, I supported Better Together because we're not going to survive the way we're going. I supported the idea. There was stuff in there I didn't like. But maybe we ought to start just doing incremental and see how it goes.
The problem with the Freeholders from a legal standpoint, right, is that they can't dictate to municipalities.
No, they cannot.
And so that becomes
the people behind
the
Freeholders.
When you make big structural changes,
right,
that's going to be the impediment.
The people behind the Freeholders are the municipal officials that want to keep their horrible fiefdoms that are crippling our region.
Yeah, the reason that Senator Lamping and I were on different sides of that particular issue is because I sort of felt the same way that Jane did, just because I knew it was kind of a Hail Mary, but incremental is not going to work. You know why? Because we're not going to do it. And I thought that this was a chance to maybe save this region. I understood the flaws. I understood the pushback from the municipalities, but I sort of was in the camp that said, let's blow it up because this is the opportunity.
We had someone who was injured by a police car, and they couldn't figure out what police department it was because we have too many rinky-dink police departments in St. Louis County. We have too much overlapping garbage. And the people behind the Freeholders, it was to fight Better Together. And those are the people who want to keep their small slices of power. It has nothing to do with the people. And so I don't know how we're ever going to get past that. And they're not on the board anyway. So
I don't usually argue against too much government because I'm not sure there is such a thing. But I think in St. Louis, we have too much government.
We do. And I think you have Democrats and Republicans agreeing on that.
Anybody get stuck in the snow the other day? MoDOT engineer Bob Becker admitted that he felt that they didn't know that second burst was coming and they would have put heavier treatment down, but they're careful not to waste money. But, you know, they did the best they can given the circumstances. Now, my position sometimes on these snowstorms is everybody expects perfection. You're going to be slipping and sliding when it's snowing and there's not going to be anything that can be done about that. On the other hand, I thought this was an interesting moment for MoDOT because he basically admitted maybe they should have done more.
Look at the radar. I mean, I saw it coming. I'm like, they're talking about less than a half inch of snow. And I'm like, I'm looking at this radar going. And I mean, I'm not a weather meteorologist, but I'm looking at this huge band. And I'm like, I think this is going to be worse than they think it is. But
they were all getting their information from the same place. I work for a company that shall remain nameless. It employs about 6,000 people in about 15 different locations in this area. And we have a emergency procedure for a go home early because of bad weather kind of thing. And I thought the same thing you thought, Jane. Came in and all morning long was like, we should go, we should leave. And they're like, no, we're good, we're good, we're good. So there's some official, maybe some weather bureau or something. Everyone subscribes to the same thing. So my corporation, nobody left early. And my employees, I made my employees go home early. I have a smaller location. But it was still an hour and a half commute more. So
I mean, there were people who got stuck on 70. I mean, this wasn't like the ice, you know, and they say, I guess the almanac is as good as a source, but, you know, they're saying we're going to have more ice and stuff, and that's more dangerous. But we had people crippled on Highway 70. I mean, that's
Where I live in the Fenton High Ridge area, at least 2 inches. I'm not so sure it was 2.5 inches. And that was where there was the closure on 44 by Antire because, you know, there was an accident. So, look, it was slippery. But again, the expectation that during a storm, whether it's a half inch, an inch, there are people that are going to be sliding around. For a couple of reasons. Somebody may catch some black ice and it may be slippery, and then there's stupid drivers too. So you got the combination of the two, and it's not good.
And the grocery stores.
I heard a segment this morning on Total Information AM with Dean DeVore talking with one of their meteorologists at AccuWeather about the, you know, the potential for snowfall perhaps on the lower side compared to most years. But we'll remember that. Dave, let's flag that tape and see where we are in March when we, on average, I think last year we had around 22 inches, and sometimes those come in, you know, 6, 8, 10-inch snows, and then you don't get very much the rest of the season. I'm just happy that it's not going to be 14 degrees when I'm in a deer stand tomorrow morning. We got to take a break. We're coming back with more on the Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, in a moment.
The Reardon Roundtable, sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust on KMOX.
Ooh, we got some brownie blender extravaganzas for the panel from Fritz's Frozen Custard. brownie blended with frozen custard. The three toppings are cookie dough, caramel, and hot fudge with chocolate custard. Enjoy again. Fritz is coming to the end of the season, sadly, next Sunday. All right, we got time for a little bit more. Jane Duker, former state senator John Lamping is here. Jack Cardetti, Democrat strategist with Tight Line Strategies. One of the most outrageous stories of the week to me, and I think we might actually find some unanimity here on this panel, is what happened up in Evanston, Illinois. The Daily Northwestern apologizing to students for reporting news that triggered them. So the backstory here is, and this is not a university-run newspaper. It's a student-run newspaper. I think maybe like the Maneater in Columbia. Mm-hmm. So it's not the Columbia Missourian, which is run by the university mm-hmm. and the journalism school. It's a daily paper from the students. And when Jeff Sessions came, the former attorney general, now Alabama Senate candidate and supporter of that evil president, Donald Trump, with college Republicans, there were lefties that went crazy. They protested. But then when the Daily Northwestern did their job, they sent reporters and photographers. They covered the news. They took photographs. They talked to actual people who were there. And they did what journalists do. And then everyone complained. The snowflakes said, oh, they found us by going through the student directory. And that's like a college phone book. They didn't like being photographed. So the student editor didn't have the spine to stand up for him. And this became one of the more embarrassing moments in journalism. And I can't even say that because there have been so many embarrassing moments in journalism, John. But this one really stands out. The only thing that encourages me is I saw a lot of people on the left condemning this as well.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like both sides blew back really hard against this. I think it's easy to underappreciate what's going on college campuses these days. Jack, you were saying before you're on the campus once a semester or so. We all have kids that have gone through. But I think there's nothing scary on a college campus to have a student activist group come after you. I know a lot of conservative speakers, as they've gone around the country, are shouted down and they're afraid to go back on campuses. And I think this speaks volumes to that.
This is like Melissa Click all over again. And I remember when that happened, I mean, obviously my first instinct was to fight for the First Amendment and say, how dare you kick out a student journalism right in front of the four columns? I mean, really, is this happening? And I got dive bombed. I got mobbed by the protester crowd. But thankfully, I think First Amendment people on both sides finally said, can we have some sense here? And, you know, if our college kids can't listen to news, we have a problem.
But Jane, we have a major problem. Increasingly apparent that they can't, and that it's baffling.
Or
to
they
me.
Don't, right? Yeah, it's scary. I mean, no, it is. I do worry. I do worry that people, and it's not just college kids, but I think it's more dangerous with college kids is that people are tuning in to only their side and only what they want to hear, and it's a dangerous thing for democracy.
Look, the student reporters, and I've dealt with more student reporters in the last 20 years than maybe anybody in the state here, they're going to make mistakes.
That's
but
right.
That's the time for them to make mistakes.
Absolutely.
Do it in college. Do it in
college.
You want
to develop good
newspaper.
Journalists.
We don't want to see them make a mistake down the road. So I completely disagreed with their editorial apologizing for doing what every reporter should do. But I did not like to see everybody going around dunking on them because this is how you learn when you make a mistake here.
I mean, it's one thing to make a mistake in journal, but the editorial stuff, that's yeah. what's really getting scary is, you know, people,
Well, but here's a larger problem here is, and you know who's really gotten it right on this is the University of Chicago and its president, because basically when some of this PC nonsense came up in the aftermath of Melissa Click,
yes.
he stood up, I think it was a he, I apologize if it wasn't, for important principles at the university, and I think they even call it the University of Chicago model to make sure that everyone is represented. But the president of Northwestern, Morton Shapiro, released a statement that condemned the students for doing this, but basically still criticized the choice of Jeff Sessions as speaker. Mm. So how can you not have diversity? Look, he was the attorney general. No matter what you might think of
right.
him politically.
Then don't go. If
exactly.
you don't want to hear the guy, don't go.
Or protest, but do it in a way that's allowed under the First Amendment. And let's not get violent.
And if you are so afraid of someone on the opposite side speaking their mind, then you must not feel very secure
in what
you're saying.
But Jane, it's your peeps that are doing this. It's the young peeps that are in your party.
No. Donald Trump has declared war on the media. This is both sides. You can't, you know what? The sad part is the people in the middle who do want to hear both sides.
When's the last time a crowd of right-wing college students shouted down some left-wing speaker and shoot him off the campus and then was supported by the university?
Well, actually, right-wing protesters did shout down Donald Trump Jr. just in the last week or two. on a college campus.
Okay. Well, that
was, is true.
You know what he's talking about there? There was something that was said. I can't remember the topic they came up, and there were some voices in the crowd that expressed, you know, concern. I don't think they shouted him down exactly.
The left owns the PC culture. I mean, there's no, that's not up for debate. They own it, and universities are 90% liberal. That's a fact. We know that to be the case. And the stuff that's going on college campuses is that PC culture is responsible for this type of behavior.
All right. Anybody see the football game last night?
Mm.
Anybody see the last 12 seconds of the football game last night?
I saw the assault.
just announced he is suspended indefinitely.
Yeah. Well, look, here's my question. I think it is rest of the season, but maybe beyond that. Myles Garrett is the defensive player for the Browns that took his helmet off and basically popped Mason Rudolph, the quarterback for the Steelers, on his head. Then there were big fights that broke out. If you first saw this, and I was watching the game, I turned it off, and then my wife and I went up to bed, and she goes, "You got to see this," and it was already on Twitter.
It was
what
crazy.
Had happened. And if you see it without seeing the hit that Garrett put with his helmet on Mason Rudolph, you might think the Steelers players were overreacting because they were kicking him as he went to the ground. My question is, and it's a serious one, why would this guy not have been put in handcuffs? Look, yeah. I was at the Milwaukee Brewers game when Randall Simon took a bat and gently hit somebody dressed as a sausage in a costume, and swear to God, you remember that incident?
Yes.
He was arrested after that happened. How is this not assault?
I thought it was an assault. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just because it's in a football game. But I have to tell you the funniest tweet of all time. So, of course, O.J. Simpson is now on Twitter, which just is weird. But he was like, why is the initiator not being suspended? And this funny guy quotes that and says, OJ's upset that someone may have gotten away with something. I mean, that's
really?
Like the funniest Twitter of the day.
But
I have to say that.
But football is such a crazy, crazy violent sport. I don't think that we appreciate it unless you've had a chance to get really close to a field and you see
right
how violent
that.
It is. I mean, it's a violent act on every play. And I think if on every play somebody lost their helmet, I think what happened last night would happen more often than not.
You raise a great point. And the one thing that I remember, it was about 21 years ago, I was on the sideline at Lambeau Field, and I watched the game from that perspective, holding a parabolic mic, you know, one of those cone-shaped mics that you see on the sidelines. That was the closest that I've ever gotten to NFL action right there. And it makes an impression on you because you can see things on TV, you can see these hits in slow-mo, but when you see full speed that close, it is extremely violent. And they're modern-day gladiators, and I'm a fan of the sport. So certainly these players know the risks involved, but you're absolutely right. It is extremely violent. You know, there was a hit last night, and it came earlier in that game. It was just a good defensive play that looked brutal. So anyway, there you have it, and we'll see what happens with the Steelers. Here's the amazing thing about this, I think, from a football perspective, and what's happening with the Browns. They've struggled. Baker Mayfield, a lot of expectations, new coach this year. They finally play a good game with ugly defense by the Steelers, really both sides. A signature win, Baker Mayfield puts up a good game, and they still have it ruined by their own player doing something stupid. So nobody's talking about what Cleveland did and putting the hurt on the Steelers for a chance to win that division. They're talking about the violence that happened in the game last night, which is, you know, that's Cleveland, I guess. That's sort of like Cleveland, right?
Very symbolic. I'm a Mizzou fan. I know.
Yeah, we know the pain. All right. Cardetti, enjoy that game tomorrow. I'll be up in the woods in Howard County. You'll be at the football game against Florida.
The Tigers have the Gators' number.
Let's hope so. I would love to see that.
Ever since we've been in the SEC, we've had the Gators number.
Good luck with that. Let's see if that plays out tomorrow. Dave Klein's wearing his Florida Gators ugly colors today. Sarah Lamping, thank you for coming by and bringing my sandwich. I appreciate that.
Nice to play through with you, Mark.
Yeah, and Jane's going to hang out for the next hour. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
That's right.
I still got the sandwich as a weapon, too. Just beware in the next hour. Enjoy the Fritz's frozen custard. Second hour coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.